Welcome to Diverse City Church Sermons. We hope that you enjoy this week's message by Pastor Ray.
Today we are looking at Simon the Zealot. Now I want to tell you guys up front, I am at awe of how God uses me because you wouldn't believe how many times I feel unprepared coming to the pulpit. And I often say things like, this is a good series. And you may think to yourself, oh yeah, Pastor Ray, they're always good. You think they're good or you all, whatever. But you know, to be honest with you, there's sometimes that God just really excites me with the things that he's depositing in me. And that I am then depositing and investing in you. And this would be one of those series for sure. And I want to just challenge you to go back if you haven't and just listen to this series in its entirety and connect all the dots. Because really, God is doing something very exciting in you. That's my goal. In each of you, that God's doing something amazing. So I just want to jump in. Luke chapter 6 is where I want to start at. I'm going to read to you verses 13 through 15. It says, starting at verse 13, Jesus called his disciples to himself, and from them he chose whom he also named his apostles. And the names of these apostles were Simon, whom he gave the name Peter, and Andrew, his brother, James and John, Philip and Bartholomew, Matthew and Thomas, James the son of Alphaeus, and today we're looking at Simon called the Zealot. Can I tell you that Simon was a zealot? Now, this is very important. Matter of fact, it's the first point to introduce to you who Simon is. So Simon was a zealot. Now, some of you are going to be very encouraged by this because you all are zealots and don't know it. Each week, you discover how you got a little bit of this and a little bit of that. How many Peters do we have in the house today? We got some Peters, a couple. Y'all don't want to admit it. That's all right. We talked about Judas and how there was Judas folks in the house. And you say, well, I was really never a traitor, if you will. But what we talked about more of how bad decisions put Judas at the bottom and how he made an emotional decision which led him to commit suicide. And if you have ever been suicidal, then that means that you were thinking emotionally. So the reality is anyone who thinks with their emotions and almost makes a rash decision can relate to Judas. Do we have any Judases in the building? You don't want to admit it. I've been a Judas where I've wanted to make an emotional decision. Okay, now y'all don't want to admit it, but I admit it. I've been a Judas a whole lot of times in my life. A Judas is someone that'll buy a car but not think it through because emotionally they think they need one and then they get it repoed 2 years later. Do I have any Judases in the building? All right, thanks. See, I got a few more of them. All right, a Judas is someone who's going to get a job, say it's a job from the Lord, but then someone at work does the wrong thing to them, and they get so mad that they can't put up with it that they walk out the building. Is there any Judases in the building? See, I got some Judases here. I can tell you about Andrew and Bartholomew, because the reality is we fit in the mold of many of these people, and today I want to talk to you about Simon, but let me tell you about Simon. Besides the name Simon being listed among the 12 apostles in those four accounts that we keep talking about, there is absolutely, and I'm using this word again, there is absolutely no records of Simon the Zealot anywhere in the Bible. Nowhere. The only thing we know about Simon is in the four accounts where it says that he's one of the 12 apostles. That's it. Not a single word is ever said, and not a single deed is ever recorded about Simon the Zealot. The only thing that we know about Simon is that he was one of the 12 apostles and he was a zealot. So think about that. Really, if all we know is he was a zealot, then I could just say he's a zealot and we could go home, right? Wrong. This is Diverse City Church. We got to have at least a 2-hour sermon. Just messing. But really, it's important that we dissect each of these apostles. Therefore, you have to really begin to look at Simon, the title he had, Simon the Zealot, and begin to research this word zealot and what it means. So carrying the name zealot gives us two discussion points to consider about Simon. The first one is this. He was zealous. Obviously, zealot means you are zealous. So zealot means that he was passionate. He was full of zeal. Though we do not know a whole lot about Simon, one thing we do know is this, is that he had a flaming zeal and a burning passion for what he believed. He was a passionate man. He was a zealous man. He was a man that was willing to stand up and fight for what he believed and stood on. He was zealous. He was full of zeal and passion and burned with the desire to do the convictions that was on his heart. The second thing we know about this word, Simon the Zealot, is he was most likely connected to a political party that existed during the time of Jesus, which was called the Zealots. The Zealots was a particular party among the Jewish people, and we got to remember, during this time, the Jews were under the Roman rule. This means that the Jewish people had an authority higher than their own government and king. They were to the rule or submitted to the rule of the Roman Empire. That's why Jesus said things like, give to Caesar what is Caesar's and unto God what is God's. Because the reality is that the Jewish people were under the rule or the thumb or the leadership of the Roman Empire. I say this to you because it's very important for us to understand where we are contextually, to understand the real heart behind, I don't know what's going on with this mic, but I'm going to change it here in a minute. What's going on with the zealots? So a zealot is someone that is deciding to rebel against the Roman Empire. So some decided to live peacefully. They were saying, you know what? Yes, the Romans are in charge. Yes, we are not running the show. Yes, they are in authority. But here's the reality. This is the place we're in. The Romans are in charge of us, and I'm not going to be rebellious against the Romans. But the Zealots were different. They were Jews, and they were wholeheartedly supporting the Mosaic law. But they were so wholeheartedly supporting the law that they knew that it was impossible for them to follow the law of Moses and be good citizens of Rome. And they said, you know what? I am going to rebel, thank you, against the Roman Empire because we cannot be good Jews and submit to Rome. The Zealots were angry. They were angry because they could no longer do and be what God told them to do and be. That's what they thought. They thought the things they wanted to do, as in some of the festivals or feasts, and some of the things they wanted to practice and their worship, they felt like it was being jeopardized by the Romans. See, now they're a little different than the Pharisees. Now the Pharisees, some of you know them by reading the Bible, are ones that they practiced the law and they preached the law. The Sadducees, they practiced the law and they preached the law. There's another group of people that came on a little bit after Jesus, which was the Essenes. And these were people who practiced the law and preached the law. All three of them were Jewish groups that practiced the law and preached the law. But the Zealots stood alone and were a little different. They were always ready to practice the law and preach the law, but they also resisted Roman authority. Unlike the Pharisees, Sadducees, and all of the others, they were unwilling to submit to Roman rule. The Zealots were fanatics.
They were always ready to go to the extreme, even using violence to get their point across to the oppressor, which was Rome. Is everybody with me? So I want you to understand what's happening here. When you see the word zealot, it doesn't mean they weren't Jewish. They were much like the Apostle Paul. They were much like the Pharisees and Sadducees. They believed in the law of God. They believed in being the people of God. The only difference was is the zealots represented a principle and a policy that all the other Jewish groups did not share. The Sadducees lived a good life and sought out high places among the Roman Empire while keeping the law. The Pharisees believed that it was God's will to live in the world under the Roman Empire, and they just tried to be as pure as they could while Rome was in office. The Essenes was simply fleeing from the Roman Empire. They fled and they went out and they just got all together and lived in a commune out in the desert. So there's three different groups of people here that are handling the Roman Empire's leadership differently. The Pharisees were saying, you know what, we're going to just keep honoring God and just believe that God put us in this position. The Sadducees said, you know what, we're going to keep honoring God, but we're going to do our best to be a part of the Roman Empire. And then you got the other group that says, you know what, we're rebelling against all of this, but we're not going to rebel outwardly, but instead we're going to run off and live in the desert and have our own little commune. But then you got the zealots who come along, and they're completely different than all three of these other groups, and they say, you know what, we're going to confront this. We're not running, we're not going to be a part of it, and we're not going to tolerate it. We're going to stand up, we're going to boycott, we're going to riot, we're going to burn stuff down, and we'll kill people if they get in the way. And this is what the zealots did. The zealots were a radical and revolutionary party among the Jews. These zealots today would be kind of like what we would call that group, the Anonymous. They were the anarchies. They were the ones that were rebelling against the government, and they were going to do whatever they could to preserve their faith and to preserve their patriotic stance of the Jewish people. Y'all with me so far? I need you to see who Simon was. Simon was radical. Zealots loved their people, which was the Jews. They loved their people. They did not love the Romans. They were not a fan of the Greeks. Matter of fact, they hated them. They were known to rebel against the Roman authority. They were Pharisees, a sect of the Pharisees, the most strict of all of the Pharisees. Because they believed that because they were so orthodox that they could not keep the laws of God unless Rome was out of the picture. Therefore, they rebelled against the Roman government. Their patriotism was so red hot, and their patriotism was so blazing hot that they performed patriotic crimes such as rebellion, boycotts, riots, and even murder. These zealots had a mind of their own. They would not allow the Roman government to control them. According to the first century historian by the name of Josephus, has anybody ever heard Josephus? A couple people? Okay. He was a first century historian. Around the time of 30 to maybe 70 to 100 AD. So he was around right around the time of Jesus. And some of his writings really began to show us what the time and culture looked like during the days of Jesus. And Josephus wrote in one of his books that zealots were the ones who started the Jewish war in 66 AD. And the Jewish war lasted for maybe 4 or 5 years. And this is what led to the rebellion, the revolt, and the eventually liberation from the Roman rule. I say this because I need us to understand that these zealots were nothing to play with. These dudes were cutthroat. No one would tell them what to do. I'm going to do what I want to do, and I rebel against any authority that is different than what God has told me to do. They was bucking folks. I mean, you know, look, I'm not saying we should be a zealot, but it would be nice to have a zealot and you know, just to know one. You know what I'm saying? We don't want to be one, but it can't hurt to know one. All right, let's keep on going. So Simon, not only was he a zealot, rebelling against the quote-unquote structure of that time, Rome, not only was he this guy that believed in this is how we're going to do it, regardless of whatever gets in our way, we're going to fix it. But what you can see is, was he a part of the zealot group, but he was also zealous. Matter of fact, you can't be a part of the zealots if you're not zealous. Y'all with me? You couldn't be a part of a group called the zealots but not be passionate. So not only was he a zealot, but Simon was passionate. That's the second point I want you to see, is Simon was passionate. Jesus was able to use Simon's passion. Y'all hear me? Being passionate is a good thing. Now, look, honestly, let's just be honest. People do not want to follow someone who lacks passion. Right? Let me tell you what happens here a lot of times. I'll come and I'll preach sometimes here, sometimes somewhere else. And then it's like all the time people come up and they say, you know what, man, I really enjoyed listening to you preach. I'm like, man, thank you. And then you'll go on and it won't be, that's the best message I've ever heard. You're better than anyone I've ever heard. It's not that. Here's what I hear all the time. You can tell that you believe what you preach and you're passionate when you deliver it. And he said, man, I've been a part of so many churches and sat under so much teaching where there's no passion in what's being delivered. And what happens is people begin to come back, not only because of authenticity, not only because of depth and good preaching, but because of passion. Can you imagine if I preached the same context but did not believe what I preached? If I did not have the passion to match what I was delivering? I say that because we need to understand that people follow passion. Oh, God's good. Oh, well, he looks real good. He's been good to me. I can't tell he's been good to you. I'm real happy to be alive. The Lord is, right? No, people follow passion. When they see joy and excitement on your face, it's contagious and they want it. See, Jesus was able to see passion. He was able to see zeal. Now, some of you are saying, well, did not he notice the rebellion? Did he not see his jacked up ways? Did he not see that he was willing to kill people because of his passion? Well, sure, Jesus saw that too. Jesus sees our mess. But he calls you because of what else he sees. And he saw the passion of Simon beyond the stupidity of Simon. See, most people do not stumble across success. It's passionate people who succeed. Success and greatness is achieved out of passion. Do you hear me? Yeah, some people get real lucky and they're born into royal family. Once in a while, someone hits it big and they pass on some money. But the reality is most of us will only achieve greatness through passion. If you live a melancholy, go with the flow, oh God, give it to me attitude, you'll probably die wanting what you never got. But passionate people, people who stay up late and wake up early, passionate people who make a list and they're tired and can't do anything else, but they somehow pray and get a second and third wind. Passionate people who are willing to do anything it takes to get whatever they need. See, God is looking for passionate people. Not lazy. Not spiritual people who pray and wait for God to do it. Pray until something happens. Just push. No, I'm tired of just pushing. Pray until something happens. I'm going to pray, and then I'm going to go try to make something happen. And if I can't make it happen, I'm going to keep pushing because God's going to make it happen. But somewhere along the line, a lazy spirit got in church. Where we thought just sitting back and praying and speaking in tongues and going to church and running around the building and waiting for God to do it was going to give us our answers. Can I tell you that if you only have prayer but you don't have passion, you won't see promise fulfilled? Oh, I'm talking to somebody today. I said if you only have prayer and you don't have passion, you will not see promises fulfilled. It takes you making a schedule, making a plan, and being willing to sacrifice while everyone else is playing. Passion. Passion's going to go against the grain. Passion is going to make you feel uncomfortable. Passion is going to make you stay up late at night and have to drink more coffee than usually would be necessary because you feel like God has called you and you're compelled to see it come to pass. Passion. I want to ask you, is there any passionate people in the building today? Because passion is necessary to accomplish the big task that lays before you. Yeah. Can I tell you in James chapter 5 and 6, it says the effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. You know, a lot of us, we pray and we believe that a prayer availeth much. A prayer don't availeth much. That's not what it says. A prayer availing. Availing means you got it. You won. You conquered. You broke through. You broke through. And some of us say, I've been praying for years, but I haven't broke through. Why am I not breaking through? Because prayers alone may not break you through. But it is the effective, fervent prayers that break you through. It is the passionate prayers. It's the prayers that continue to be prayed up. It's the excitement. It's the expectation. It's the burning zeal inside of your heart that cries out to God and does not give in. It's the relentless prayers. It's the committed prayers. It's the day in and day out, I'm not gonna let go until you bless me kind of prayers. See, but we've gotten comfortable with, oh, Lord, just make a way. In Luke chapter 18, verse 3, it says, now there was a widow in that city, and she came to him saying, great justice for me from my adversary. And the judge would not for a while, but afterward he said within himself, though I do not fear God nor regard man, yet because this widow troubles me, I will avenge her, lest by her continual coming she wear me out. Jesus was saying the kingdom of God is like a woman who at this time did not have a whole lot of rights. A widow, so that means she did not have some sort of secure income. She did not have a voice. She had nobody advocating for her. She was a no-name. She was a lowlife. That's what the picture is being painted. And it says that she goes to the judge. You know, us, we can have a degree and judges don't listen to us. Right? Well, you could be male, female, money in your bank account, but sometimes the system doesn't hear you. But here you've got a woman who was a widow going to the system, and the system would not listen to her. The judge would not entertain her story and would not offer justice to those who've done her wrong. But it says eventually, not because he feared God, not because he regarded man, not because he cared about his reputation. The only thing that made him respond and to do something about her request is because she kept on coming back. She was passionate. She was persistent. She continued. Can I tell you that God has spoken to some of you and said, I'm going to get you that, and you ask one time for it, and you don't get it, and you quit. He tells you to go take that test, and you go take it, and you fail, and you quit. You've taken it 4 times, and 5 times, and 6 times, and you quit. Can I tell you that that's not the spirit of passion? Passion doesn't quit when it gets a failing grade. Passion doesn't quit. Passion doesn't quit when they're told no. Passion doesn't quit when it's in the eyes of adversity. Passion continues to move forward regardless of the no's it gets because it's passionate about seeing a promise fulfilled. You say, Pastor, I want to know if I'm passionate or not. My question is, do you give up? If you've given up on dreams, you're not as passionate as God would want you to be. If you decided to realign or call an audible of your future, and now you've decided you're going to follow another road instead of the original road because that road was too hard and too long, so now you're going a different way, it may be you're lacking passion. Can I tell you, passion is dying in our world. You see people signing up for college and they go off to be a doctor, but after just about 3 years, they say, you know what? I don't know if I can do another 9. I think I'm going to settle with a business degree because they lack the passion. Can I tell you that passion will make you do something as long as necessary as it takes to get done because you're passionate about seeing what God has put on your heart fulfilled? Passion. See, Simon was passionate. Simon was willing to give up his own life for what he believed in. Simon believed that he was being wrongly treated by the Roman Empire, and he didn't care if he was killed himself because he was passionate. See, passionate people keep moving forward even when the consequences could be deadly. Oh, I'm preaching all over to somebody today. I want God to reignite passion in you. That you can be excited again and get your mojo back and you'll wake up and you're ready to chase the world and accomplish your dreams. Not just float on through and barely get by. See, we must be consistent and persistent. These are both signs of being passionate. Passion is being a whole person. This is good right here. Y'all ready? Passion is being a whole person to one thing at all times. Let me say that again. Passion is being your whole person to one thing at all times. I remember coming to St. Louis in 2009 and becoming the pastor here. At that time, St. Louis Harvest, the first 6 years I was bivocational and had to supplement my income by working in the secular world. And I did that gladly because I knew that God had a plan for my life, but I struggled every once in a while with keeping my passion right. Because what happened along my journey of this 6-year bivocational career path that the Lord had me on is opportunities came for me to be in management and for me to be in real estate and for me to become a supervisor and work my way up. I was offered jobs with Walmart being a store manager, and they would put me through a store manager track and said, look, in a year and a half, you'll make $250,000. And I'm thinking, look, bro, I'll be honest with you. I'm about to change my passion. I begin to see myself building my own outside secular career more than I was building the original reason God called me here. I remember knocking on doors and saying, hey, my name is Ray Sewell, and I work with this real estate company, and I'm a new agent here, and we're trying to do this, this, and this, and I just want to hand you my flyer and my business card and tell you if you ever need to sell a house, I'll hook you up, and I'm doing all this. And I walked away from that door, and the Lord said to me, he says, Ray, I wanted you to go door to door and share the gospel, and you're going door to door building a business. And I remember quitting that job. I called him up and I said, hey, thank you for the opportunity. Thank you for the money he was going to invest in me. You probably think I'm an idiot. You probably think that, you know, you can't trust me, whatever. I think what you think. But the reality is I got to quit. And I quit because what happened is I allowed my priorities to get out of whack. God brought me to St. Louis for one thing, to build a church. But somehow I allowed things to get out of whack and I was trying to have dual purpose. And anytime you try to have dual purpose, things get neglected. That's why I say passion is being a whole person to one thing at all times. And all of us get out of sorts every once in a while, but we need to regroup, refocus, and realign and focus on what God has called us for. It's hard to be successful when you are interested in many things and not passionate about just one. You hear me? You can be interested about all the stuff you want, but you need to figure out what God has called you to and stay in your lane. Don't sell out to everything. Just sell out to one thing. We have to find our passion and we have to have a singular focus. We can't be scatterbrained. Scatterbrained doesn't take you to success. Scatterbrained gets you nowhere. The only way to be successful is to figure out what God's called you to and focus on that and that alone. Next thing I want you to see is Jesus welcomed Simon's passion. Again, Jesus welcomed Simon's passion. Zealots had passion. Zealots knew what passion was. As a zealot, they were taught to love their people. As a zealot, they were taught to love God and His law. As a zealot, they were taught it's not about your own life, it's about the greater good. As a zealot, they were taught that they need to be willing to die for their beliefs or they're not good enough to be a zealot. See, zealots were self-sacrificing. Zealots knew what it was to give up everything they had. They would go stand on the front line and watch some of their zealot buddies die at the rule of Rome. But they didn't care because they signed up for their convictions and their passion. See, yes, Jesus saw dysfunction in Simon, but Jesus also saw passion. See, zealots were untamed, they were violent, and they were often using weapons, not spiritual weapons, but they were using worldly, carnal weapons to defend their cause. Once Jesus called Simon to himself, he didn't have to convince Simon to be passionate. He didn't have to convince Simon to give up everything he already had because Simon already knew what it was to live a sacrificial life. Y'all with me? He wasn't perfect, but there were some things that Simon already knew. Simon may not have been, Simon may have been, and I don't know if this is true, but I just kind of wrote it here, read it in some books, and it really sounds good and makes sense. And what some people say is that Simon may have been the most daring and the boldest of all the apostles. And this is just based off speculation, as we have no record of anything that he did. We think we know how he was martyred. History says how they think he was martyred, but the Bible doesn't say that. Okay, we don't know. Some think that maybe he wrote the book of Jude, but we don't know it for sure. There is some discrepancy on some stuff. But at the end of the day, I say that because Simon was known, or many said, to be one of the boldest apostles. Why do I say that? Because he was trained and well prepared way in advance to be willing to give up anything. Y'all with me? So when Jesus met him, he was like, dude, this guy's dysfunctional. He's rebellious. He be killing people. He don't listen to nobody. He does whatever he wants. He's hot-headed. He's so passionate. He talks too much. He's always getting himself in trouble. Boy, I could use him on my team. Right? I mean, it doesn't even make sense, does it? You wonder why the Pharisees were so angry. They were angry and they criticized Jesus' leadership because who in the world is going to put a zealot on your team? They began to question his role, his integrity. How can you possibly be the Son of God and put this person on your team? Right? Not possible. I think I said something earlier and my brain's telling me now to re-say it. And that is Jude. Did when I said he may have wrote the book of Jude, did I say that? I thought I said that. Scratch that. Like, you know how you do that Men in Black thing and you take out that thought, right? So we're going to do it right now. Matter of fact, I even got my Men in Black pen. You guys are going to forget that thought. Okay. As I'm also studying for next week, who is Thaddeus, a.k.a. some say Judas, a.k.a. some say Jude. He's the one they think maybe wrote the book of Jude, not Simon. Okay, glad I clarified that so y'all can't use it against me later. Okay, moving on. Look what it says in Mark 8:35. Thank you, Lord, for catching that for me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. So what is being said is, if you want to save your life, you're going to make your life not about you. But if you make your life about you, you're going to lose the life that you have. Meaning, if you live a self-absorbed life and you make it all about you, don't be surprised when you lose all you're trying to build. But when you make it more about other people and you're willing to give up everything you aspire to do, everything that you really wanted, God's going to give you because he knows your heart and your desires for others and not for yourself. See, now, look, God had to teach this to people like Peter, James, and John. But he didn't need to teach this to Simon. Simon had already signed up to give away everything. He was a zealot. Y'all with me? See, Simon had to only do one thing, and that was redirect his passion. This is my closing, my close to my close. Now you heard close to the close, right? All right, so don't keep that in mind. Okay, my close to my close is he had to redirect his passion. Look, God wants you to have passion. People say, well, you know what? I mean, I don't really know. I mean, you know, I mean, really, I mean, I don't know if I have passion. No, we all have passion. Some of us have sexual passion. Oh, I didn't know he's talking about that passion. Oh, I'm talking, some of y'all got passion for crack cocaine, coke, LSD, PCP, whatever. Some of you have passion to be the first president that's Asian. I don't know. There's only two people in the church that could be, but if you know any Asian people, please bring them to church. But some, like, I don't know what your passion is. Yeah, I just want to have a degree. You know, I'm passionate about hunting. I'm passionate about fishing. I'm passionate about clothes. I like shoes. I like this, right? We all have passion. KRS-One said something. He had this one song. I don't know if it was just a one-hit wonder, but it was a Christian song. And in his Christian song, he says, you don't have to teach people how to worship because everybody knows how to worship something. Right? He says, the problem is, it's not teaching worship. It's just teaching them what to worship. Oh, I don't know what worship is. Yeah, you do. You worry about money every day. You worship money. So the same thing applies. Stop worrying about money and start thanking God. Stop thinking about God. And then your money becomes God, and then your worship becomes God. In the same note, I don't have to teach you passion. I just need to redirect the passion that you already have. Y'all with me? See, Jesus was okay with Simon being jacked up because he could see beyond the flaws and see the passion. And he said, this dude's gonna be good. All I gotta do is help him redirect his passion. Simon was attracted to the message that Jesus was preaching. Jesus looked like a zealot. He looked like a rebel. I can imagine that Simon loved hearing Jesus rebuke the Pharisees. Oh, I like this Jesus. I can imagine Simon probably loving to hear Jesus say things like, I'm not of this world. Probably got excited saying, oh, he don't respect Rome either. This my dude. Simon most likely had his interest on following Jesus sparked because he looked at Jesus and saw a potential rebellious figure that would help him bring the culture and the freedom from Rome. It's very possible that Simon initially started following Jesus because he thought Jesus was someone else than he really was. Simon most likely thought that Jesus was going to overthrow Rome. But here's the difference with Jesus than the zealots. Jesus taught grace, not going off.
Oh, somebody needs to hear that.
Jesus taught grace, not going off. Zealots go off. Jesus had grace. Jesus taught respect, not rebellion. Jesus taught repaying with love, not hate. See, the zealot said, you had me down, but I'm going to show you that I'm not the one to be messed with. But Jesus said things like, if they want to walk 1 mile, go 2 miles. If they want to take your cloak, give it to them. If they smack you on one cheek, give them your other cheek. See, Simon didn't understand stuff like that. See, because Simon was taught his entire life that he's been an oppressed people, and the only way that he would get back is if he stood up and fought. See, some of us can relate to that. Because when you live years as a victim, you live years in oppression, you're beat up and stereotyped and yelled at, you feel like the only out is to stand up and defend yourself at all costs. And we become angry. We lash out. We cuss people. We fight. We do whatever it takes because we will defend ourselves. And then Jesus shows up on the scene and says, don't worry about it. I got your back. Have grace. Don't go off. Love them. Don't hate. Don't have rebellion in your heart, but respect them. There's some Simons in the building, isn't it? I believe that some of Jesus' sermons could have been specifically written for Simon. Kind of like I preach some weeks and after service, some of y'all come up to me and you say, Pastor, I don't know who else that message was for, but I tell you, it was straight for me. That's called a rhema word. Like, it was for you. Like, that was me. Like, there was nobody else. Tunnel vision, God just speaking to you. I believe that Simon had some rhema words from God. And one of them was probably in Matthew 5:44 when he says, but I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, and do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. Oh, I bet you Simon was lighting up on the inside thinking to himself, how in the world can I love them and not hate them and repay good for their evil? I've been held down for years, living in oppression my entire life. You don't know what my grandmother went through. I saw my great-granddad get killed. I saw this happen, and you're telling me that I gotta have grace? See, I believe that Simon had a hard time with Matthew 4:44-5. I really believe that. Matter of fact, how many of us have a hard time with Matthew, the 44th verse in 5th chapter, right? Because we've built these walls that says this is what we have to do. But we don't. So here's my closing point. Remember I said close the close? Here's my closing one for real, for real. The church shouldn't look like only you. Now this might just be the best part of all of it. But look, let me say it again. The church shouldn't look like only you. Y'all with me? Now let me explain. Simon, y'all know Simon, right? We've been talking about him. Simon and Matthew, we talked about Matthew a couple weeks ago. If you weren't here for it, I'm sorry. Simon and Matthew were polar opposites. Y'all with me? It's important you get this. Matthew collected taxes for the Roman Empire. Simon rebelled against the tax system. Okay, let me keep going. Matthew made a living off of being a Roman government employee. Simon rebelled against the Roman government. Matthew was unpatriotic and became a sellout under the Roman rule. Where Simon was a patriot through and through and did not stand for anything that Rome stood for. Can I tell you that Simon could have been a Democrat or a Republican, and then the other group, the other one, Matthew, could have been a Republican or a Democrat, and they had completely different views, yet they became friends. They did life together. They followed Jesus together. They healed people together. They worshiped together, even though their backgrounds were completely different. Can I tell you, no type of person, no personality, no one mindset is to be excluded from Jesus. Jesus is calling all people to himself, regardless of what type of person, what type of personality, and what kind of mindset, that Jesus is inclusive and everyone is invited to his table. Everyone. Jesus delights in a diverse church. Do you hear me? Let me say that again on this side. Jesus delights in a diverse church. He loves it when he sees people of all color and all socioeconomical backgrounds, Republicans and Democrats and people who don't care to vote. Christians be killing me. Oh, you a Christian, you gotta vote. Where's it say that at? Oh, you a Christian and you're a Democrat. Oh, you're a Christian, why ain't you a Republican? Oh, you a Christian and you voted for them. Can I tell you that there are people in this building that voted for Hillary Clinton and lost, and voted for Donald Trump and won, and at the end of the day, it doesn't matter, because we are here for something far greater than Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. It's not about all that. And the enemy wants us to sit and focus on Twitter and Facebook and all these other social media accounts. And we go to our homepage. Some of y'all, it's Fox, and others, it's CNN. And you begin to see these raging wars against the other party. And then you begin to question everything. Can I tell you that you're not black first? You are not a Republican first. You're not a woman first. You're not a Democrat first. You are a Christian first. That is number one beyond all of it. When we go into our places and we vote, you vote however you want. But outside of us voting however we want, we are to worship Jesus Christ in our differences. And we are to celebrate diversity. We are to welcome you the way you are and how you are, and not try to manipulate and scheme and change people to be me. I don't want you to be me. I want you to be you. We must remember that as Christians, we do not single people out who look like us. We don't just get people on our team that act like us. You don't want people around you that just have the same political views as us. We need to get people of all political views, of all colors, all socioeconomical backgrounds and levels, so on and so forth. We are to be inclusive. Do you hear me? Inclusive. We are to be welcoming of all people. We are to be a church who welcomes all people. All people. Black, white, Asian, Hispanic. If they're a heterosexual or a homosexual. I'm not saying I agree with any or any not. I'm just simply saying that Jesus died for absolutely everyone. And we don't need to call their sin out before they come to Jesus. Just first let them get in the building, love them where they are, and eventually we'll realign their passion as Jesus did with Simon and get them on a road to recovery. But for too long, we're like, oh no, I can't bring you in. You struggled with this. You dealt with this. Look what you wear. You're not welcome here. You need to fix this first. Can I tell you that if that would have been the case, Jesus would have did ministry all by himself. But he brought the lowlifes, the jacked up people, the ones that were far from God, and says, come on into my circle. I'm going to bring you onto my team. And he began to teach them and love them and minister to them. Oh, Pastor, well, I'm a little bit scared to do that. Why? Jesus did it. We are to be a church that welcomes all people. regardless of where they are with Jesus. No, they may not all be in leadership next week. No, we may not agree with everything they do. But just wait on that. That's not important. What's important is loving them right where they are. And know that they are accepted and welcome and included, and that there's equality and there's equity and there's oneness among the body of Christ, even if they're jacked up. We can also learn something about building a team if we look at Jesus. Look at this team, and listen, this is this team. This is so important, because a lot of you try to build teams and you want your team to look like how you want it to look. Can I tell you, building a team is not like drafting in the NFL. Okay? It's different. Your job's not to go to these drafts and pick out who's the best and who looks like you and who's going to offer you the most. You're going to get people on your team that may never be anything more than a water boy, but they need to be on your team. It may be people that don't look like you, reason like you, understand like you, and they don't come from a place that you come from. You can't relate on them with 9 things out of 10, but it doesn't matter. I want you on my team because I need you. See, Jesus brought people on his team that he couldn't even honestly relate with. Rebellion? Jesus can't understand rebellion. But Jesus understood his passion. Look at Jesus' team. He had Peter, the enthusiastic man who was full of faith, a natural born leader. He had Thomas, who had huge issues with doubt. So first is one that is amazingly full of faith and leadership, and then Thomas, who has doubt. Then you got James and John. These are the sons of thunder, who are always putting foot in mouth, thinking too soon. Then you got Philip, a man that only leans on his own mental capacity and logic and doesn't even allow God into his equation. Then you got Bartholomew, a man who studied the word of God and loved having devotional time. Then you had Matthew, the employee of Rome. And then you had Simon, the rebellious man of Rome. Look at this. You want to talk about diversity, man. Why are we Diversity Church? Because we celebrate diversity. And I'm not talking about black and white. I'm talking about we want to see gospel, contemporary, dancing, miming, interpretive dance. We want to see people drawing prophetic worship on the stage. We want everyone to be ministered to. We'll switch it up and hit you with a hymn or two because we want to respect people that are more seasoned in their faith. We want to make sure that we are being relevant to all people because God celebrates diversity. I don't want to be at a black church. I don't want to be at a white church. I don't want to be at an uppity church. And I don't want to be at a poor church. I don't want any of those. I want a church. I envision that God wants us to be a church that is socioeconomically so diverse that you can have a lawyer and a doctor and an educator and a homeless person and a single mom, someone who dropped out of school in third grade, someone who had to raise themselves, depression, anxiety, cocky, and then someone else who is just humble and transparent and been hurt and never been in church, don't want nothing to do with church, or maybe they've been in church their whole life and they need remolded with church. This is the kingdom of God. Yeah. Oh, pastor, but you know what? It's hard being at a diverse church because why are they behind me being all loud? Don't they know you ain't supposed to be loud during this time? Right? Y'all laughing, but you know it. They ain't supposed to do this now. Says who? Says your church experience. Well, but it ain't supposed to go like this. I can't believe they trying to do this. They trying to do that, right? We need to celebrate people who's going to come in and not be like us. Learn to know their name. Learn their kids. Learn their struggles. Learn their hurts. Love them deeply. And then once a few months go by and you begin to connect with them on an intimate level, then you begin to talk about their struggles and help them to transition their passion. But up front, can I tell you that it's not important? That is the very last thing you need to worry about is getting them saved overnight. You need to know that you love them where they are and that you'll be there tomorrow. And then when all hell breaks loose, they can call you up and say, when no one else was I need to help you redirect your passion. If your passion changes, everything changes. I believe that God wants to help us to be better and more like Simon. And I'd like to pray. Matter of fact, I'm just praying right now because I want to do an invitation today for this altar. Bow your heads with me. God, my prayer right now is for my family and my friends that are here in service. There are lots of passionate people here. There's lots of people who have been hurt and oppressed here. They have felt like they've had to buck up and protect themselves. And today they're about to relearn some things, Lord, and they want to say, I just want to be like you, Jesus. And I'm praying for those people. I'm praying right now for everyone here that has been hurt, abused, neglected, taken advantage of, and now you have built walls around you. And you act as if you got to protect yourself and you need to buff the system and no one's going to walk over you anymore because of what's happened to you. And this message is for you today. And you're saying, you know what? I want God to do to me what he did to Simon, where I no longer have anger, but instead I have love. I no longer go all out, but instead I have grace. I want you to join me here if that's you. The second thing that I want to say is there's some people here that relates more like Simon in a different way. You relate to Simon by being so passionate. But you need God to redirect your passion. If that's you, I'd like you to join me here. You're saying, God, I just want you to redirect my passion. And here's the third call. Some of you are like, you know what, man, I don't know what I'm passionate about anymore. I don't know what I'm passionate about anymore. I don't know what I'm passionate about. I'm just kind of just going through the motions, man. If that's you, I want you to come. You say, God, I just want you to restore my passion. Three calls have been made. God, restore my passion. Restore my passion is number one. Restore my passion. Number two is, Lord, I want you to redirect my passion. And number three is, God, I've been so hurt that I just want to lash out, but rather I want to turn from that, Lord, and learn to have grace instead of going off. If that's you, can you come? Just come on, come on. There's some more of you. Come on. Don't stay there. Come on. If that's you, just come on. Lord, reignite my passion. Lord, take away my hurt from oppression, from being hurt, being let down. God, I don't want to be like that. I don't want to be like Simon the Zealot. I want to be like Simon the Apostle. If that's you, I need you to come. I need you to come. Listen, God's going to restore your passion, Lord. Lord, begin to work right now. Begin to work right now. Begin to work right now. My prayer right now, Lord, is for us who are here at Skyburn City Church, that we right now are having a renewed passion. We need you. We want to understand what your will is for our life. We don't want to just go through the motions, Lord.
Thank you for joining us, and we hope this message blessed you.